Once you are outside of the cathedral, go towards its southern flank, which opens on the big Trento Trieste Square. This open space landmark was designed and built at the same time as the cathedral, and has always been at the center of the city's social life. Even to this day, there are open-air markets, fairs, and various events and gatherings throughout the year. For example, of special note, there is the Mille Miglia race in May, the Buskers Festival, a street musician festival in August, and a beautiful, colorful Christmas market. While I'm telling you about this marvelous square, feel free to wander about and enjoy its lovely art and architecture. Can you see the low-hanging portico running down the southern flank of the cathedral? This is the Merchant's Lodge, a system of rooms leaning against the outer wall of the cathedral, which took on the function of housing shops and spice merchants. Today, the lodge is occupied by some of the most exclusive shops in Ferrara. But you can try to imagine what it must have been like in the past. Stands and bodegas, with baskets overflowing with scented herbs and spices, ripe fruit and precious cloths. Carts filled with every type of merchandise. Perhaps some hens running about here and there, happy to have just escaped from their straw menagerie. Always looking at the southern side of the cathedral, you can see elaborate decorations with two rows of columns and arches sculpted in various styles. About halfway down, however, these lodges are interrupted and now there remains just a little trace of a wide arc that once was. This arc was known in the past as the great Porte dei Mesi, the Doorway of the Months, which was closed and demolished during the 18th century restoration. This great archway was also known as the Porte dei Pellegrini, for the traveling pilgrims who would stop on their way to Rome. The Porta dei Mesi was richly decorated with marble tiles dating back to the 13th century. These tiles were removed and are now on display at the Cathedral Museum, a place I highly recommend you go and visit. The museum can be found inside the ex-church of San Romano, exactly opposite the south side of the cathedral on the other side of the square. Do you see it? In addition to the tiles from the 13th century, the archway was adorned with fantastical hippogriffins, the ones which are now in the little square in front of the cathedral of which I mentioned in track 1. The south side of the cathedral holds another treasure, though, one which is not so immediately observable, but serves as an excellent testimony of the medieval period not only in Ferrara, but in all of Europe as well. I'm talking about an extraordinary epigraph dating back to the era of communes in the Middle Ages. There is a series of antique marble slabs which together form an epigraph almost 80 meters in length, running down the greater part of the side of the cathedral. The Citizen Statute of 1173 is written on these slabs when Ferrara was a free commune. The epigraphical statute is testimony to a brief period of good fortune in the city. Wealth and rapid growth were allowed by the waterway networks that made trading of goods and ideas incredibly easy. Soon, however, this all changed and the delicate balance of the commune was altered irrevocably by the Estense family, who came to power towards the end of the 1200s. So, as it seems, only 100 years after its creation, the great epigraph of marble plaques was no longer legible due to, firstly, the merchants who had permission to permanently set up shop in the lodge, essentially blocking the plaques from the citizens, and secondly, in the 1300s, the lower part of the statue was covered by the raising of the square's floor. An eloquent cover-up, wouldn't you say? This was quite a clever move by the new rising family in power. Not all is lost, though, as today some of these marble plaques are still visible thanks to some important restorations. If you want, you can observe them by entering in one of the shops and asking for the Statuto Comunale Medievale, the medieval commune statue. And between the shelves, you can see the famous inscription. I find this statue to be quite fascinating for both its bizarre history and its content, which represents a united community's expression of self way before its time. It is enough to remember that the medieval European communes started writing their ordinances only after the Peace of Constance, which resolved the problems between the Barbarossa Empire and the municipalities in 1183. Ferrara's was inscribed 10 years earlier to that. Thank you. Okay, some more information regarding the wonders of the square. By now, I'm sure you have noticed the cathedral's magnificent bell tower located again, further down on the south side. Beautiful, elegant, proud, always searching to dominate the skies above Ferrara, almost as if challenging the four towers of the Estense castle. Quite curious, no? The two historical architectural structures of Ferrara belong to the two powers who wrote the history of Ferrara and make it what it is today. First, you have the Este family, and then the cardinals after the devolution in 1598 of the Estense duchy to the papal state. The design of the bell tower is attributed to the hand of a great master, none other than Leon Battista Alberti. The bell tower has quite an impressive presence due to its massive square base and the development of the tower using four big blocks stacked upon one another. Simple, yet strong. Showing up already in the 18th century city chronicles, citizens talked enthusiastically about the robust and deep foundation that probably could have supported more sections, making the tower even taller. Enormous wooden beams embedded in the muddy ground down to exceptional depths seem to have been used. The solidity of the work as a whole has been demonstrated by the fact that centuries have passed and the bell tower remains unmoved, almost nonchalant, without any signs of failing. It has become an exception for a place where, due to a variety of wet and unstable terrain full of water all the way up to the surface, which is very typical for Ferrara, the various towers in the city have always tended to lean over time, or even, as in some cases, collapse. Now, the actual completion of the work was, on the other hand, plagued with problems. The construction started in 1412, and the last cube was placed on top in 1578, but the tower lacked a final cover. It's interesting to know that in the 1700s, the city organized a public lottery of sorts to help raise funds necessary to finish the job with an adequate cover. But the money collected was not enough, and in the end, nothing was done to the tower. Also later on, there was another plan to put the final touches on the tower. The money was set aside, but yet again, nothing was done as the money mysteriously disappeared. Stolen or lost, no one knows. The ending result in all of this is that we today see the tower as it was originally finished, still young and strong in its alternating colors, which brings to mind certainly the Romanesque of the cathedral by following in its footsteps using the same style. Now I'll leave you to enjoy the pale rose-colored marble from Verona, that in the red light of sunlight lights up like the granite peaks of the Dolomites. Now one last tidbit about the bell tower. In the eyes of the Ferrarese people, the weather vane at the top is infallible when it comes to predicting the weather, and its positioning in the direction of prevailing winds indicates whether the day after will be sunny or rainy. It's probably more anecdotal than historically proven, but ask anyone and they'll tell you it's reliable. As you can notice, the bell tower is not actually attached to the body of the cathedral, but right next to it, and recently some renovations have been done to the external parts between the two. This little area allows you to see firsthand the architectural volumes of each. The rose marbled tower with its particular geometric shapes goes together well with the Renaissance-style curves of the terracotta apse by the great master Biagio Rossetti. The little square was named in memory of Pope Carlo Wojtyla, and if you go around, you will discover that you end up on Via Bersigliere del Po. Before moving on and immersing ourselves in the maze of streets that makes up the oldest part of the city, I'll give you some tips and suggestions for visiting the Cathedral Museum, which can be found again in the ex-San Roman Church, which is located in Piazza Trenta Trieste. The museum has three main areas. In the hall of the ex-convent, there is a series of Renaissance antiphonaries expressing the humanism of the Este, from Leonello to Borso. In the hall of the church, the most important part of the museum can be found. Here you can see the celebrated organ panels by Cosme Tura, a Ferrarese Renaissance master and painter for the Este court, which displays St. George and the Dragon, and the Annunciation from 1496. There are also eight enormous tapestries by the Flemish artist Johannes Karcher, finished between 1550 and 1553, which were done on top of drawings by Garofalo and Camillo Filippi. They are really something to behold. As history has it, they were used in processions and liturgies of particular importance. In fact, they depict the histories of the patron saints of Ferrara, St. George, whom I've already mentioned, and St. Aurelius, who was also a patron saint and was the first bishop of the city. Speaking of the tapestries, It's interesting to note that they were considered extremely precious objects and were in high demand at the Este court well into the early 1400s. The Este family loved to buy these finely crafted tapestries because they were very light and easy to maneuver and could be displayed on any type of surface, walls, beds, and doorways, on headboards, in the castle or in the family retreats in the countryside, in triumphal processions, or simply while traveling. These tapestries gave them the artistic scenery of the highest caliber. If you can believe this, they even covered the boat they used while moving up and down the Po, called the Bucentoro, with ornate tapestries. But let's get back to the museum. Other gems to admire are the sculptured tiles recovered from the cathedral's Porta dei Mesi, which date back to the early 13th century by an anonymous master who was thereafter referred to as the Master of the Months, the Maestro dei Mesi, a rising star of the Italian Romanesque. Each tile represents a month by depicting an agricultural activity typical of that month. For example, in September, there is a farmer who is very delighted to be harvesting grapes. The artistic result is very impressive not only for its beauty, but also for the refined realism in the details. In the apse, there is the Madonna della Melagrana, the Mary of the Pomegranate, from 1406 by Jacopo della Quercia. The grace and delicacy of the sculpture are capable of profoundly moving you. It is truly an unbeatable masterpiece when talking about Italian sculpture in the 1400s. Finally, in the ex-sacristy, you can find various liturgical and sacred objects of fine workmanship and high artistic value. Okay, now the only thing left for me to say about the museum is, have a nice visit!